Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
How the devil are you all, and welcome back to another episode. Right, tonight I've got Steve on the show, who had a fleeting encounter in just up the road from me, really, near Brigweon, and a few other experiences to boot, so look forward to that. Again, I'm still using the same email address as the previous shows that I've done, so it's supernaturalpod@gmail.com. That's supernaturalpod@gmail.com. So if you want to get in contact with me, you can either get in contact with me there, or I'm Lee Solway on Facebook. That's Lee, S-O-L-W-A-Y, on Facebook. Check out the t-shirts while you're there. I have got some Bigfoot t-shirts in the store, as well as all the other things I do on X-School Clothing. So, you know, if you want to support me, there you go. Nothing much to report. Went out on a camp a couple of weekends ago and had something walk up to the camp, bipedal. In nature, once it clocked we was there, it made off. But in, you know, we never heard it, make off. We heard it come, we heard it stop, and then that was it. So, yeah, interesting. And again, it was only a few footsteps, you know, who knows? But obviously we'll be going back to that location. So stay tuned and you never know what we might find. But without further ado, let's get on with tonight's show.
Okay, Steve. So do you want to tell us about what you was doing and then obviously leading to what you saw and then we'll go from there? Because me and you, like I say, have exchanged quite a few ideas through text messages and that. So it'd be interesting to get your full opinions on what you know now.
Yeah, we certainly have over the past few months. It's been trying to like tie each other down to a date. But
that's
it absolutely is. I mean, it was Sunday, 17th of July, 1994. It was a normal night. You know, I was a DJ at the time, and it was always a good night over in Hibblestow, Lincolnshire, because we used to have a party or a village hall party every month, 6 weeks, and you know the whole village would turn out and make it a good night. So nothing out of the ordinary there. So me and my mate packed our gear up about half 11, 20 to 12. And he went off in the van to take the gear home. And I headed out of Hibblestow towards Scorby and Brigg. Literally, it must have been about 12 o'clock. I was, there's a cement works as you head out of Hibblestow on the left-hand side. As you're heading towards Scorby, there's a brow of a hill that takes you over, whether it's a little river or a little flyover, whatever it is. And literally about 12, 15 seconds after leaving the brow of the hill, my headlights caught something, full on, in the middle of the road. It was an extremely hot, warm, muggy night. You know, the windows were down in the car. It was the old windy windows that we had back in the day. I thought you're still kind of like buzzing from the disco and having a good night and having a laugh. And, you know, I thought, bloody hell, I thought somebody's been like run over or hit in the road. And as my lights got nearer to it, I slowed down from probably 30, 40 miles an hour down to about 15 miles an hour. And my lights caught this man figure in the road picking something up. I it could be roadkill. It could have been anything. But as my headlights kind of like caught it on full on, it turned, picked up whatever was laying in the road, and within two strides it was down, you know, across, moving from left to right down into the foliage, into the bushes, and off it went. And as it moved, it was an extremely fluid motion. It wasn't like a jerky motion. It seemed to rise, I would say, effortlessly, you know, from being in a crouched position. The thing from the road was in its left hand, so I couldn't really see what it was, but I wasn't kind of like concentrating on that at the time. And it kind of like just strode off. But you could see whether it was like grass or dust coming off it as it disappeared. And obviously it dipped into the undergrowth, into the bush, and I'd kind of like gone past it, always looking at it. And you could see kind of like the coarse matted hair or fur that was on its body, but the body was not height wise. It was about six and a half foot, no more than that. But it was the actual bulk. You know, I always say it was like a shot putter or a weightlifter, you know, the upper torso.
No.
And as I kind of like went past it, it was down in the undergrowth, and I could see kind of like the left hand side of its face, and the face had kind of like in my red, you know, brake lights, and it was like I would describe it as like a silverish red. obviously the red was from the brake lights, but it was like a clean kind of like face. I couldn't see the ears at the time, but the, you know, the fur was, or the hair was kind of like matted with you know, like dried grass and hay.
Yeah.
And it dropped down into the undergrowth, and it made, I wouldn't say it was like a grunting sound. It was more like a yelp or a whooping sound as it kind of like hit its stride. And off it went. I mean, the whole thing must have lasted 12 or 15 seconds from actually seeing it in the headlights to as me speeding off. Incredibly bizarre, incredibly weird. That's basically what happened. And I sat on that for 28 years.
Well, you would, because you know, we just don't have any exposure to this. You know, like I said, we've spoke before, and so many instances in my life where things didn't make sense, things happened, they didn't quite fit, you know, anything. Mm. I mean, a lot of things might say, a lot of people might assume it was a ghost, that kind of thing, because you just couldn't explain it in any other, you know, reason behind it. And then when you realize that these things are about, then all of a sudden you go back through and you go, do you know what? Some of those things actually make more sense being this rather than this. I'll give you a quick example. I think I've shared this on the show before. I had a friend of mine, and for years he always wondered about this night. He was coming back home as a small child at the time, about 11-year-old. He was coming back home, and he knew he had to be home for a certain time because his dad would give him a right rollicking, like.
Yeah.
And anyway, this particular night, he decided there's a little copse of trees in this field, and he decided he's going to make his way to it. Anyway, for whatever reason, he'd never been there before, and he just thought, oh, you know, it's a summer's evening, I'm going to go to those trees. You know, in the farmer's field, like you get.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he just hopped over this wall and was about to make his way to this, and he got a message. Well, he heard something in his head say no. Mm. Anyway, he stopped, and he thought, that was strange, you know, because, you know, you don't expect that, do you? So, but then he thought in his head, he's thinking, no, I'm going to keep going to this group of trees. Anyway, he starts to motion to go over the wall again, and then he gets it a second time. No. Anyway, so he's like, right, something's not right here. I'm going home. So he went home. And he always put it down to, well, we spoke about it. Oh, yes, we spoke about it. You know, every time it came up in conversation, we'd say, what do you think it was? Guardian angel, this kind of thing. And then obviously now, fast forward sort of 20 years from him originally telling me this, you think some people have this, I know a lot of people don't believe it, but this mind speak, you know, was this one of those creatures was in that woods?
Yeah.
And was telling him, you know, which probably makes more logical sense than a ghost. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's just, that's a little example of how many times we brush things off, and you know, this creature. So, and I think you're like me, we call them sort of wild men in the UK rather than
rather Bigfoot or anything like that. Yeah, absolutely.
I think Bigfoot conjures up a very different image to what we see in the UK. I mean, I'm not saying we don't see the Bigfoot esque creature, but a lot of times we see this wild man, which just look like almost like a primitive, you know, human.
I think the Bigfoots in America, I think they're over commercialized, if you know what I mean, with the drinks and pack up boxes and all the stuff that you can buy. But I firmly believe that what I saw was, I mean, I know that it was a living, breathing creature because I could see its breath. You know, I could see the grass, you know, moving from its hair or its fur. So yeah, absolutely. I fully agree that what I saw was, like I say, a living, breathing creature, and it was on a mission to do something. It was heading somewhere, and obviously I disrupted what it was doing.
And obviously, we've got many examples in the UK of from anything from Neanderthal, Denisovians to, you know, the whole lot's been here at some point. So could this still be lingering on from that? It's a possibility, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you approached this, was it facing Was it facing away or towards you? Or was it sideways on?
It was sideways on.
Right.
So it was kind of like its back and right arm were more in my view. Its head was down and the left hand was the one that was picking up something from the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Which... So as it turned, you know, I couldn't see the left hand, but I could see fully the right hand as it went across the car and into the bushes and into the ditch. But by the time my car had gone past it, you know, I could probably see from its lower back upwards.
And anatomy wise, would you say male or female, or could you not tell? Or
I would say male. That's the random guess, I suppose. But
the thing is, like, what is interesting is, it's interesting because a lot of the counters, people, I'm not going to say assume, but people, what they see, they generally see males, but which kind of would make sense if they're the hunter gatherers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, people do on occasion see, not so much in the UK, but obviously, you know, further abroad, they might see the female with the small ones, that kind of thing. Mm. But generally in the UK, people see the male one. If you're going to see one, it's going to be the male one. It's out and about.
Yeah. Like.
So, I mean, we can assume that it was picking up roadkill. Who knows? So, and obviously it moved off and it made this noise, like a whooping noise. Is this like, you know, like almost akin to like a chimp, you know, before it starts moving off, like you described?
Yeah, it seemed to work in tandem with the footsteps as it kind of like dropped into the further into the bushes, because I've been back there, you know, for a documentary a couple of months ago, and to this day, you know, 30 years later, I never knew that there was a footpath there.
Oh, yeah.
I've driven past it quite a few times in the car, but never actually physically got out to have a look. So, you know, for the documentary, we parked up and there's a footpath there, and exactly where I saw what I saw, there's like a big hole in the bushes.
Yeah.
Like it's still being used.
Yeah.
Which was really, it was good to see, because it kind of like gave me a little bit of a friendly hug, I would call it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're telling your story to people, and you know, you're hoping that they believe you. And at the exact spot that I saw this thing, you know, there's the road, there's a little bit of grass in between the road and the path. It drops down, you know, a foot onto the footpath, and then it drops down again. So it's like the drops, and and off it went.
It's interesting
there's like probably about half a mile away from the road, there's like a big wooded area as well.
Mm.
It's changed. I mean, it has changed so much in 30 years, but there's like the field there, which obviously has been used by farmers or whatever, but half a mile away there's a massive wooded area, and that obviously takes you through to the Lincolnshire Wolds as well.
Yeah.
But the amount of people that said, oh, you know, the UK, it's not got the infrastructure to kind of support animals.
Of course it has.
You know, people who go missing for like 3 or 4 months, they live on stream water and berries and stuff.
Look at people who you know, just recently, there's been 5 or 6 cases locally to us, you know, in this sort of region from Barton to sort of here, where people with Alzheimer's, things like that, have gone missing.
Yeah.
You know, and this is people wearing, you know, bright clothing, those sorts of things, and they can go missing for days without, you know, and they're not trying to hide either. They're just lost.
Yeah, something's happened. Yeah, something's interrupted what they were doing.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that's what I did. I interrupted this thing. I'm more like he interrupted me.
I mean, that noise, would you say, I'm trying to get like a bead on what that noise that he made, because I'm wondering why he made the noise. Obviously, you're saying like he's stepping down, so it's almost like, you know, he's going, you know, like when you got I'm sort of in my head, I'm picturing, you know, when you walk on hot sand and you go, you do that sort of like,
yeah,
ooh, 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 yeah, yeah, that, ooh, yeah, yeah, that's sort of, that's what I'm picturing. But I wonder if, yeah, I'm wondering if he was like more, you know, like upset, or maybe it was like a that sort of noise. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it wasn't a grunt or a growl as such.
It wasn't actually directed at you.
No, it didn't seem to be. No. It seemed to be either whether, was it he or it's hurt? You know, did it hurt when he dropped down? I don't know. But, you know, it was a 12 to 15 segment of my life that's took me 28 years to actually talk about.
It's such a unique experience, you know. How many people have seen this? A handful of people?
I mean, it wasn't from hundreds of yards away.
No.
It was 15, 20 foot away, probably closer.
So it was, as far as we know, it was wearing no clothing.
No clothing, absolutely not.
And it was carrying no weapons or anything like that.
No, nothing at all.
You know, and the actual body, the side of the face looked like it was clean shaven or...
Absolutely, yeah.
Or a youngish animal, maybe.
Yeah, I did say that the mouth seems to be lower than what ours was. Ours is.
Yeah.
The nose, kind of like protruding brow as such, or the eyes. But the nose, there seems to be a lot of distance between, you know, the nose and the mouth. It seems like the mouth seems like droop down a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's common. And if you look at the, you know, the records, they do kind of show that like, you know, we have like almost like a one finger gap between our nose and our upper lip, and they tend to have like 2 to 3, even 4.
Yeah, this was a lot lower, but the fur or the hair on the back, you'd almost describe it as being braided.
Right.
Yeah, the way it was kind of like matted with the fur and the grass, it was almost like not dreadlocks as such, but big kind of like clumps of fur.
Yeah.
Down the back.
So more patchy than like a coat.
I wouldn't say patchy. No, the actual hair and the fur was pretty pronounced.
All right.
You know, all the way over the body, apart from the face. But if you imagine, when a dog's got really kind of like matted fur on its back end, or that needs cleaning, you know, needs put in.
Yeah.
It was like that. It was almost like a congealed kind of like, where probably like the fur had got wet or mud or something on it, and it got dry and it kind of like got all matted together.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like that.
And the hair on the head, so this covering, as much as you can remember, the covering of the head down to the back of its body, was it almost like one, was it sort of uniform? Or was it this sort of, the head was sort of more distinct from the body, you know, the hair on the head, or
the looking at the back of it, it was, I wouldn't say all in one. The head seemed, the head and back of the neck moved separately to what the fur did at the back.
Although
you know, the fur on the head did trail down the back as it kind of like went down, and I'm looking in my back mirror and back windows. The head seemed to move, and the fur on the head seemed to move separate to the body. It's so difficult to describe.
Yeah.
But if you imagine, I wouldn't say like a monkey suit or something like that. It wouldn't, a monkey suit, if somebody was wearing a fancy dress costume, it wouldn't have moved like that. You know, this was moving separately, and you could see, you know, that, like, I wouldn't, probably it could have actually been at the base, which the base of the back was more kind of like probably where its elbow was, you know, from your elbow to your forearm.
Yeah.
So the arm seems to be a lot lower than, or a lot longer than what ours is. Because if I stand up now, I mean, my elbow is probably around my hip area. The elbow was probably down to the thigh, you know, from the mid area down to the thigh. So the arms were a heck of a lot longer. And I knew that as soon as it picked up whatever it was picking up from the road, because the left hand would kind of like trail with the left leg. So yeah, it's a shot putter, a muscular appearance, braided fur, matted fur with grass and anything in it, but extremely long arms and
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, if you know, when we finish this call, if you go and Google picture of a recentish human and a Neanderthal sort of side by side, and then compare those skeletons, and what you'll find is that the chest cavity of the Neanderthal is like a big barrel, you know, it's huge compared to ours, and obviously that would be represented in the shoulders as well, and obviously the muscularity of the creature. But the other thing that you find is that when scientists and that, or museum creators, whatever, put these things together, they tend to make it more upright. They position them in a certain way where their arm length matches ours. But if you look at where the collarbone is on the skeletons, if you pull up this picture, you'll see it immediately. You look at the collarbones and you actually put the arms where they should be, where they should insert, you can clearly see that the arms of that Neanderthal do drop below its knees. To its knees, and they were really, really low down. Compared to where because they actually got the modern human skeleton next to it.
If you could imagine the hand, I mean, like I say, it's something that happened, you know, 12, 15 seconds, but it almost looked like the fingers were, there was no fur on the fingers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
The fingers were more a lighter colour. The fur, from what I remember, on the right hand side.
What skin colour?
I would say it was a really kind of like really pale skin colour, not like ours, but it was like a. I mean, it was my lights were on it. And you know, my red lights were on it, but 100%, I don't know what color. You know, it was like a pale kind of color, but it didn't seem like our kind of color. It just seemed like a different hue to our skin.
Yeah.
But the fur actually seemed to stop round about the before the knuckles, and it just seemed a lot lighter. If you imagine someone wearing fingerless gloves.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I've looked at ghillie suits and, you know, the stuff that people wear, you know, when they're doing that, the overnight camping, and when the army are doing, you know, maneuvers and stuff like that, and none of it look like this thing's fingers. Well, none of it.
Interesting. The hair is interesting to me because, you know, I think I've pointed you out this before, but, you know, I've had a couple of people that have seen a similar creature and the hair on top of the head does seem distinctly different from the rest of the body. Although it still has that sort of curly sort of nature to it, you know, that like you said, a braided nature to it. And the closest you can compare it to, and I think I might have sent you this picture, is like an Aboriginal, sort of Australian Aboriginal.
Yeah.
With the, you know, they tend to have not like coarse. Yeah, when you think of the African tribes, they tend to have like a real short, coarse sort of hair. But yeah, the Aboriginals tend to have like a more longer sort of curly. It's not dreadlocks, but it is, you know, they are sort of ringlets. Do you know what I mean? It's like a natural thing. But the people that I've spoke to that have seen a similar creature to what you're describing, the closest they can sort of match it to is this Aboriginal, the Australian Aboriginal hairstyle. Not hairstyle, they don't really do that, but it's just the way the hair forms. And that kind of sounds similar to what
because when I was describing it, I didn't want to use the word kind of like dreadlocks because these were a lot thinner.
Yeah. If people listening now Google that picture of the Aboriginal, I think there's a good picture of an Aboriginal man with like grey, his hair's greying. And that's really sort of, it looks primitive, you know?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. So, obviously, you've years have gone by and you kept this to yourself for quite a while. Now you sort of spoke to a few more people about it. What sort of reaction do you get? And do you get anybody that sort of thinks they may have seen something similar, but, you know, that kind of thing?
I mean, the people close to me know that, you know, I'm not one for spinning these tales like that. I mean, I did say to a guy that I spoke to a couple of weeks ago, you know, I was extremely poorly last year where the doctors give me a day to live.
And I
have got no, you know, I wouldn't be sat here talking to you if I, you know, I've got better things to do with my time.
Absolutely.
You know, I had a brain abscess, and luckily, you know, they caught it literally just in time.
Mm.
But, you know, the people who know me close to me know that, you know, I'm telling the truth. A lot of friends, they've come forward and say, you know, we 100% believe what you saw. I mean, I was out with an old friend last year, and I was telling him the story, and he was like getting goosebumps as I was telling him the story, because he knew what I was saying was the truth. You're always going to get the people who say, oh no, you know, the UK, it can't support this kind of life. Yeah. But I always say that, you know, a lot of these so-called investigators, you know, they're too busy looking on the ground.
Yep.
You know, I believe that, you know, the answers could be in the trees.
I agree.
If you know what I mean, you know, people are so focused on looking at footprints, blah blah blah.
I had a guy the other day. He had he pitched up. He was hammock camping. He pitched up his tarp. He was under the tarp, and he had rocks, acorns, who knows, thrown at the tarp. He lifted the edge of the tarp, shone his torch around, couldn't see anything. And I said to him, "Did you look up?"
Yeah.
Yeah. Never even thought to look up.
Yeah.
You know. I'm not saying he would have seen something, you know, but it was just a brief thing, you know. It didn't go on all night. It's not one of them, you know, where he's terrified. He still managed to do what he needed to do. But it was just one of those weird things where you just noticed that, you know, something's not right. Well, what you noticed is that it started off as what you thought was acorns, and then eventually it moved on to branches, things like that. But yeah, no point did he look up, which is strange, because we don't do that as humans. We're not programmed, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been back to the location a few times, and yeah, they said that wooded area is just across the field, you know, and then that takes you onto the Lincolnshire Wolds, and there's so many tributaries, you know, as regards streams and ley lines as well. I think that's another thing that I'm currently looking at the moment.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that I'll be, you know, looking at where the ley lines are, you know, in between Scorby and Hibblestow. But there's so many other people that seen something similar to me. I mean, Did you hear about the one where they found the deer legs just outside Humberside Airport?
Yeah, that was us.
Yeah, that's that's. I mean, that was how I kind of like got in touch, you know, with you and vice versa. I mean, to see that, what on earth? What did you think when you saw that? I mean, that's for me.
It was a weird one because that whole night was strange because it was Aaron who was driving back and it was about midnight and he first seen him and he was a bit too, like, he didn't want to get out of the car initially. Not because of what he saw the deer legs, it's because the way the animals were acting. Normally, as you drive down that road, the rabbits and things like that will run away from you. Yeah. This particular night, as he was driving down, he just had rabbits running towards his car. And that sort of put him on edge. And then he saw the legs. So then he rings me. I go out there. He waits for me. We drive back. And then we're looking at these legs. And one of the legs still had, like, the... Because people tell me, oh, it's poachers, cut them off and all this kind of stuff. Well, the tendons were still hanging out. And one of them still had, like, the... You know, like, the joint, the gristly sort of white joint part. That was still attached to the ball. And again, there was both front legs, left and right. There was no rear legs anywhere, and there was no blood, no trace of blood. It was almost like this thing had been fighting whoever was carrying it, and he'd got fed up with it kicking around and just ripped the legs off and dropped them where he stood. But exactly the same as what you described, we looked across the road, the direction of travel of this thing, and there's a hole in the hedge, bang opposite.
Wow.
You know? So and that, I didn't know, but apparently that hedge... as you go through that hedge and cross the field, it actually leads to a reservoir back there.
But all small body stuff, of water. Yeah.
So.
Wow.
But yeah, that was. I mean, you know.
I mean, to see that. Yeah. Apologies for forgetting that it was you that saw it. You know, my brain sometimes at the moment. But I mean, can you imagine the strength that they've taken? Like you say, to have legs ripped off and actually still have the ball and the gristle and everything.
Yeah, well, what's weird about that is I was listening to Bigfoot Encounters, I think it is, with that Vic Kilmdiff. I was listening to an episode he did this week, or it was recent, and there's a guy who came back, he did the first show, and then the second show he came on to talk about feral people. These people like that... a few generations ago, they went back into the Appalachians and they live, you know, nomadic lifestyle back there. And he came on to do like a second part, which was to talk about that. But in the first part, he actually mentioned that him and his friends had seen a few different deer kills over the years in the area that they sort of go looking for this Bigfoot. And he did actually mention that one time they came across these two front deer legs that had been torn off. So this is a guy in America, you know, in the Appalachians, seeing exactly the same thing as what we've seen just up the road from us. It, those sorts of things. I mean, people will say it's just a coincidence. I got loads of people telling me it'd been run over. You know, a trucker did it and it torn the legs off, you know. And I think that sounds wonderful. But this was off the side of the road. Anyone who wants to pull a picture up can actually see that they're actually, it's on like the chevron-y bit that, you know, so it's not even in the road. It's on the chevron-y bit off the road. That's not to say it wouldn't be thrown there, but where's the rest of the carcass? Where's the blood? Where's the,
exactly,
you know,
I was just about to say
bears don't just disintegrate when they get hit by a truck, because we see them all the time, don't we?
We've all seen roadkill and the mess it makes, even with a hedgehog or a badger.
Yeah, like every time I see a deer kill now, I look, has it got all its limbs?
Yeah.
You know, mostly they have broken necks, things like that. But I eat pheasants and things like that all the time. They don't disintegrate.
No, there's fur and entrails and everything.
Yeah.
Blood.
You know, fox is the same. So, and I understand people who don't come across this subject, you know, because like I say, we don't have no exposure to it in the UK really at all. I understand their skepticism. I get it. You know, I really do.
Yeah.
But if they were there on that night, looking at what we saw, and like I say, the hole in the hedge that side, the hole in the hedge this side, it was basically a straight run. I don't think the deer was picked up there. I think there was traveling back with the deer, with the kill, back to wherever they came from, I presume. And whatever reason, this deer was kicking or whatever, and they just ripped the legs off to disable it, basically. Stop it, maybe they had to put it down, because with it being near the road, maybe they had to put it down to hunker down because there's a car coming. And they just, you know, didn't want it to run off. Maybe they see something else that was going to get, who knows? It'd be interesting to see if there's any tribes, you know, around the world, primitive tribes that are still knocking around that would do something like that to immobilize an animal.
But there was the lady that saw the creature on the A15. I mean, the A15 is the main road, isn't it, between, you know, Scunthorpe and Lincoln.
Yeah.
And, you know, to the Humber Bridge as well. Saw an eight-foot dark creature on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, and other people must have seen it because it's on the A15.
Well, I know guys that work in the same place that I work, and they're all sceptical, you know, blah, blah, blah. And a handful of them have seen stuff now in that region. So they're not going to go talking to everyone else about it. They'll tell me because they know. But in general, they ain't going to go down the pub and tell people. Do you know what I mean? But people are seeing stuff all the time.
Yeah.
A15, Fillingham, you know, a guy saw something there similar to what you described there. Yeah, it's up and down there. Up and down. People see what they call a scarecrow. Essentially, what it does, it'll be, because you know the A15, well, people that don't know, the A15 is essentially a straight road that runs pretty much from the M180 all the way to Lincoln, essentially. Like, you know, it's fairly straight road. It just runs in a straight line. And there's fields more or less both sides of it all the way along.
Yeah.
And it's quite open. And this creature, it's got the nickname the Scarecrow in our little thing, because what it will do, it'll literally be running across a field and a car will come and it'll just stand still like a scarecrow.
Mm.
And some people clock it because they get an uneasy feeling and then they look. They don't see it moving. They actually they get the feeling, and then they look and see it there. But it's like a scarecrow, you know? And then obviously they drive back up that road later on that night or whatever, and there's nothing in the field, no scarecrow.
There was a guy that, when I was working in Brigg, which is actually right next to Hibblestone and Scorby, a while ago, and we were talking about the A15, and he was a farmer, but probably still is a farmer there, and it'd been, you know, in his farm for generations, you know, his dad before him and his granddad, and we was on about traffic on the A15, and I said to him, just completely off the cuff, I said, they should have made that a dual carriageway years and years ago to ease the traffic.
Yeah.
And he said, they won't do because of the creatures that are living there. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? He says, the stuff that we see that people don't know about. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he's describing kind of like, big cats and stuff like that that's go into the farms and, you know, take the chickens and stuff like that. And I'm thinking, wow, what if the people, you know, or government know that there's something or some things there, and that's one of the reasons why they've not built a dual carriageway. It could be a lot of rubbish.
Yeah, but it could just be like an urban legend of that area, but I mean, but generally speaking, these things do emanate from somewhere. There's always a reason behind these legends, isn't there? So, you know as well as you do, every time you go on there, you get stuck behind a wagon. So, of course.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, dual carriageway would be absolute. And there's no reason why not, because the amount of wagons that fall off the road down there, you know. That sounds legit to me.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I'm 90% sure that these big cat sightings are a native cat. You know,
I've never actually seen one. I mean, a lot of the photos that you see, it could be anything.
Well, a lot of the house, some of them are house cats and things like that. You see, But yeah, when you see them, because I've seen one. Yeah, I think I've only seen one crossing the A46, incidentally. But that was, it was very panther like, but it wasn't a panther. I know people will just see, oh, it's black, it's a panther, but it wasn't. It was very much. It was still feline, but it was more stocky. It was almost like a cross between a dog and a cat. Do you know what I mean? I can't really describe. It's difficult to describe, but if you saw it, oh, not you, but if people saw it, I can understand why they'd go to panther. But for me, it didn't look like that. There was something off about it, and I'm wondering if it's some sort of native cat, and maybe people do know about it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, because they send the police up, marksmen in helicopters all the time. When someone reports them, they shut the 46 off or whatever it is, and they send marksmen up in helicopters for them. You know?
Wow.
It's odd.
Yeah, I was just, you know, going back to what I saw. The body mass, I mean, what would it take for a creature or a person or whatever to have that kind of body mass? Like I say, it was like a bodybuilder. Is it masses of protein, you know, the animals or you know, stuff like that? Because it was huge. You know, the upper body was absolutely huge.
Well, a clan of... Now, if we're talking about these being Neanderthals or something of that ilk, which, I mean, probably not Neanderthal because they tended to use a lot more tools and things like that, so it might be something more like a Denisovian or whatever. But if you look at them, they estimate they had like a range of 50 miles. You know, a clan would have a range of 50 miles. So that's a lot of moving around trying to find food.
Yeah.
You know, I know obviously gorillas have an adaptation where they still eat protein. People assume, because they always, vegans make this argument about, like, you know, oh, gorillas got so much muscle mass, but it doesn't eat meat. Well, it does eat protein. It actually has a mechanism in its guts where it breaks down leaves. Bacteria eat the leaves, and then it basically eats the bacteria that are feeding on the leaves in its gut.
Absolutely. You know,
so it gets a high amount of protein. But it's difficult to say because these creatures don't look like gorillas. They don't look like they've got that. You would assume that they have to catch a lot of protein or things to survive. But the thing is, you know as well as I do that we had these creatures here who did that for millions of years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not out the realms of possibility, is it? We're not saying it's something extraordinary. It's just the way they've survived for millions of years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we've got them tracks, them tracks in Norfolk that washed up.
Yeah.
You know, was it a couple of years ago or a year ago, 18 months, something like that? I think they said they was like 2 million year old. You know? So,
there's more than meets the eye. You know, I always say to people, it's a lot of rubbish. You know, just open your mind. You know, don't be, because I was one of those at the time. If somebody, you know, 35 years ago said, oh, I saw something like in the woods or something crossing the road, a big hairy thing, I'd be like, yeah, rubbish.
Yeah.
But the older you get, and you know, there was no internet as such when I saw this, and I've kind of like kept it to myself, but did more and more kind of like looking. Not just on YouTube, because there's a lot of fakery and people wanting clicks, but actually looking at, you know, ancient books as well from centuries ago. They all describe the wood woes or the green man, absolutely, from centuries ago, and even, you know, church.
I've got one in the hall here, a replica of a wood woes from Beverley Minster.
Wow,
you know. So, what's the most interesting part of your story and a lot of these stories that I hear is this creature was doing a natural behavior at a time that it should be doing this natural behavior. You just caught it in the act, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it realized it, the game was up, and it just moved off.
It's as simple as that. That is it. Yeah, that is it.
There's no
you know, we don't have to invent the wheel yet. It's just that simple. It was
one simple occurrence.
Yeah. 10 and seconds was... earlier, 10 seconds later, you wouldn't have seen it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. 5 minutes earlier, 5 minutes later.
But once you know, you know, don't you? And that's...
Yeah. Oh, yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And... It does. It changes your perspective on creatures and life and everything. Yeah, it has to. You know, we're all not narrow-minded. Or I hope we're not all narrow-minded. You know, because, I mean, I had another experience about 6 years ago now on the way to work and literally in the same area. But whereas my first experience in 94 was 100% visual, this was probably 20% visual, 80% audio.
Okay.
It was August 2019. I was working in agriculture, a company in Brigg, and it was August Bank Holiday Monday. Once again, it was just going through Scorby, where the cemetery is, and there's been a lot of people done investigations around Scorby Cemetery. If you go on to like YouTube and you know, places like that, and on the internet, there's a lot of people who've done like overnight camps in Scorby Cemetery, and I never knew this. And I was going down past the cemetery, and the cemetery's on the left hand side. It was 7:20 in the morning. And all it amazes me, just changing the subject, all these people that say, well, I saw this thing in 2004, but I'm not exactly sure when it was. You would know exactly what day it was.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%, you would know exactly what day you saw it on. You know, like I did, because it changes you as a person. So this was August Bank Holiday Monday, 2019. 7:20 in the morning, and there's Scorby Cemetery, and there's a building in the middle of the cemetery where obviously the groundskeeper keeps his tools and bits and pieces, probably lawnmower and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was heading down past the cemetery, and I look, and at the back of the cemetery, it looked like there was an incredibly tall figure, and I'm going to say 8.5 foot, moving. As I'm going down, this is moving up the cemetery and behind the building, which is, if you go on Google and type in Scorby Cemetery, you'll see exactly what I mean. And this thing went behind the building, and I'm like, you're having a laugh. This is bizarre. So I stopped the car, windows were down again, radio was on, and I waited. And I'm literally just at the side of the building, probably about 30, 35 foot away. I waited, got out the car, but I made sure, I always remember this, I left the door slightly open. So got out, looked at the building, nothing there, put my hand on the bonnet of the car. I remember it being extremely, extremely hot, but there was no sound at all. Usually at 7:20 in the morning, you'd hear birds and, you know, stuff like that, or birds flying around. Absolutely nothing. It was deathly quiet, to the point where it sounded like someone had put noise cancelling headphones on me.
Yeah.
And I waited probably about 30, 40 seconds. And I just got this feeling that there was, that I didn't like. And I didn't get that feeling in 94. Yeah, well, this time I got a very kind of like uneasy, kind of like shivery feeling that something wasn't quite as it should be. So I got back into the car and sped off to work, looking again back, you know, just to see if I could see anything, and I couldn't. And then I found out, obviously, this woman on the A15 has seen an 8 to 9 foot dark, thin creature as well.
Yeah.
So, but I would describe this more of like a jagged, I would say jagged like wolf dog thing. It's, yeah. You know how they have the class like the slender man is really kind of like thin.
Hmm.
this was like a black jagged figure, really, going across the cemetery. But yeah, you know, eight and a half.
Are we talking bipedal or
two legs? Yeah, absolutely, two legs.
Cemeteries and, I mean, I'm not saying this is a dogman, but cemeteries and dogmen, they go hand in hand. And I don't know, you know, going back to your earlier point on the ley lines, you know, there's something, maybe something to that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely worth looking at, doing more investigations into it, definitely. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got an uneasy feeling, but I never got an uneasy feeling in 94. Yeah, I get the feeling still to this day that, like you just said, what happened.
Yeah.
You know, it was an occurrence. But in 2019, I just felt that something just wasn't quite as it should be that morning.
Mm.
I don't know why, because it was Bank Holiday Monday. There was very, very little traffic, if none at all, around that morning. But it was just deathly quiet, to the point where, you know, you imagine yourself having earplugs or something in, and it gives you like a bit of a woozy kind of head.
Yeah.
That's how it felt.
I mean, it's not uncommon for people who experience that to have the same feeling. So
Yeah, I mean, back in 2019, I'll be honest with you, I'd never heard of a dog man. Never heard of it until, you know, probably 4 or 5 years ago. You know, when I started actually researching a little bit deeper, and when I actually decided to kind of like tell my story and come out of my shell a little bit. Because like I said, you've got to be mad or craving the attention to make up a story like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've not got a YouTube channel. I've not got a paranormal Facebook page or anything like that.
No,
you know, it's not for clicks and likes. It's hoping that people who could have seen something that I saw will come forward and tell their story as well. Yeah, that's what it's about. It's not on about wanting to, you know, have clicks or likes or anything like that, because I'm just not interested in that. It's all about just trying to help people come forward, because they could have been sitting on stuff for 20, 30, 40 years. You just don't know.
Most people go to the grave with this stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
There is, because like the more you speak to people, and you know, they know someone who knows something, and that person, it's like that, you know? Even some of the stuff that I've researched around here, one person leads to another person, leads to another person. And yeah, more of it goes on than people probably are aware of.
Yeah, and I think it's nice to hear it directly from that person.
Yeah.
Rather than hearing it from, you know, Uncle Tom who spoke to Aunt Audrey, who spoke to Dave.
Yeah,
and
Like, well, I've spoke to one person and he said, you want to speak to so-and-so. And I've gone and spoke to that person and he said, you want to speak to so-and-so. And that's kind of how I've gone. Before I know it, I've got 10 people that have seen the same thing in the same area. Yeah, you know, it's just one of them. But I'm hoping with the advent of like dash cameras and things like that, that somebody's going to get something soon in the UK. I know we've got stuff from America, but we're going to get something in the UK. I don't think that great dash cams are that great at night, but you know, technology is moving on. So just something like that, some fleeting thing.
And
it'll get on the news, and then everyone will say, oh, yeah, you know, we all knew it was there, you know, whatever. But it'll happen.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, you know, if you ever decide you want to, like, meet up or do a tour of where I saw, then, yeah, we'll do it, absolutely.
Yeah, I've actually been down that road before. I mean, you told me where it was, and I've actually been down there. I know what you're saying about that, like, the drop off on the side and that. We'll do that.
Look forward to that. Because I'd like to show you the cemetery as well.
Yeah, I might even go and pop in that woods what's nearby. Just see.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd like to pop along and do that. That'd be great.
Yeah. Oh, we'll sort that out then.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like a plan. Absolutely.
Yeah. Nice one. Well, thank you for coming forward and you know, just saying what you said. And then, like I said before, this is just a natural creature in its natural environment doing a natural act. It's nothing out of the ordinary. Yes, the fact that it's still around is quite extraordinary, but it's not out of the ordinary, you know?
Yeah,
so I can only thank you for coming on and sharing it.
Absolute pleasure. Like I say, I'm hoping that, you know, the more we talk about these things, the more people are going to come forward.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think so. I think that's how it works. I think, like I said before, one thing leads to another. And, you know, look at you, like you, I mean, you brought this up very early on in the conversation. Look at the commercial aspect of Bigfoot in America now. You know, it's on chocolate bars, it's on this, it's on that. People
everywhere,
a lot more open. And obviously that's thanks to shows like Finding Bigfoot. I know everyone gives it a hard time, but that made it sort of mainstream. You know, it made it like acceptable. You saw all these people sat in a town hall, you know, there with an experience. Absolutely. And people all of a sudden realised, hang on a minute, I'm not the only one. You know?
Yeah. I mean, have you seen the film The Legend of Boggy Creek?
Yes.
I watched that as a kid, and I absolutely, that was one of those films that absolutely scared the bejesus out of me. And it's still happening. You know, there's a guy called Lyle Blackburn.
Yeah.
He did a book all about the Boggy Creek Monster. It's absolutely fascinating, and I believe that is absolutely 100% real. I really do. And he's like you say, they went to visit the people in the town hall, and they've all got stories. I know that people have made a lot of money out of that.
Oh, the film,
but there's more to that than meets the eye. Because it's been going on for centuries, you know, going back. But like you say, there's commercialism, absolutely.
Well, again, that commercialism has actually opened the doorway for people to feel safe enough to come out without the ridicule. You know, and to some extent, even, you know, 10, 15 years ago, people who were getting abducted by aliens, this kind of thing, you know, before X-Files, if someone said something like that, people would do that music, wouldn't they? That kind of thing.
And
the news used to do it. You know, news used to play, somebody saw a UFO and then they put the X-Files music on in the background and make like a joke of it. But
joke of it, yeah.
Since things have moved on, it's not so much of a... I mean, in fact, you don't even hear about it that much now because people, it's almost... gone that mainstream that people don't even talk about it. You know,
I mean, we saw a UFO coming into Tenerife when he was on holiday in 1999. We was on a plane, and there was me and my wife in two seats, and our two daughters sat in front of us, and my eldest daughter turned around because you could see people kind of like standing up on the opposite side of the plane and looking out the window, and people on our side were looking, and my daughter said to me, "Dad, have you seen that?" And looked out the window, and there was this big silver kind of like rectangular thing shooting along the side of the plane, literally going a damn sight faster than what we were. But obviously we were coming into land, and this is the day before drones and stuff like that, but you know, we all saw this thing literally zip along the skyline as the plane was landing, and it wasn't a reflection or anything like that.
What sort of size are we talking?
It was probably half the size of the plane. A third of the size of the plane, something like that. But it was quite a way away, you know. It wasn't like kind of right up to the plane, and we all kind of what the hell is that? And you know, we're all kind of like talking as we landed and like that, and we got on the bus and went to the hotel. Next day, we got a local paper, as you do when we're abroad, and it said a UFO yesterday spotted over Tenerife.
Yeah,
and that was August 1999. So, another bizarre one.
It goes on.
It does. You know? It certainly does. Yeah, it does. But it was, yeah, I mean, we all, everybody on the plane saw it. You know, it was there.
At least they've made it easier for pilots and things to come forward nowadays. And again, you know, that just makes it a lot more easier to get the discussion going, doesn't it? You know, yeah. The fact that these pilots would not dare speak about it because they'd lose their jobs. You know, now,
yeah,
not so much, you know, so things do move on.
Yeah, even army guys and generals and sergeants, they've all come forward and said they've seen things that they can't explain.
Yeah, well, I know soldiers that they know Bigfoot's out there, believe you me, on these training training grounds that they go on, soldier planes and places like that, they know, believe you me.
Yeah, I fully believe that, absolutely, yeah. Good stuff. We'll have to touch base again soon and head out because you're not too far away from me and I'm not too far away from you. So yeah, we can get that sorted.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I'll message you then.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, brilliant.
Well, thank you again for coming on and good health to you, brother.
Yeah, same to you. Appreciate that. It's been a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
No worries. Speak again.
PTC, mate. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.